Welcome to the first ever episode of the Wrestling News Center podcast. I'm your host, the king of all wrestling media, Gene Jackson. I'm glad you've clicked the link to join us here for this new podcast that we're doing. I know many of you may be familiar with my old show, Cheap Heat Radio. And if you are a fan of Cheap Heat Radio, I do hope you're a fan of what we're doing here. But it will be a little different from what I had going on over at Cheap Heat Radio. We'll still be providing interviews each week on the show. We'll cover wrestling news, upcoming events, results, various other wrestling-related things. This show is going to be a shoot. It's not a vehicle for me to put over my heel persona that I do on the wrestling shows I work. We're not going to try to work angles on here like a lot of the guys try to do on Facebook and Twitter. We'll discuss angles and stories, but the wrestlers I have on the show will not be in character, per se. That isn't what this show is about. It's about promoting and learning about the professional wrestling business. You won't hear a lot of WWE and TNA talk on here. Well, I mean, there'll be some, but mostly we're here to promote independent wrestling and the stories you read on the WrestlingNewsCenter.com website. We want to let you know what's out there and what options you have, whether you're a wrestling fan looking for a show to watch, an independent wrestler looking for a new place to work and learn, things of that nature. So with that being said, we'll try to have a new show streaming, or downloading rather, for download rather, every Tuesday at WrestlingNewsCenter.com. They're also going to be available on iTunes. I've been told a lot of the listeners prefer to subscribe to the show via iTunes, and then it downloads directly to their iPod to listen to each week. So if that's the way you prefer to get the show, that is perfectly fine with me. I just appreciate everybody listening. And if you like the show, you know, tell a friend to check it out. Even if you don't like the show, tell a friend to check it out and listen how bad it sucks. But, you know, just give us a chance. You may not like everything, but, you know, you're bound to like something on here. So just give it a listen at least today. See what you think about it and go from there. And also, if you're into these sort of things, if you like the podcast and, you know, wrestling-related podcast, check out our friends at Wrestle Talk Radio. Every Friday at 5:30 p.m. Central, you can hear Wrestle Talk Radio at RadioRichardAndFriends.com. It's hosted by Nick and Devin, and they cover a lot more TV results and pay-per-view results than what you'll find here at our podcast. They do have indie news and interviews. They also have a Superstar of the Week. I've began listening to it, and I like it a lot, so make sure and check it out at RadioRichardAndFriends.com. Click the link for Wrestle Talk Radio. Like I say, they're live every Monday at 5:30 p.m. Central, but you can also check out the archives there as well. So I want to get right into today's show. A little bit later on, we'll be hearing from our guest, an interview I recorded with Superstar Bill Dundee. I talked to him Saturday in Tupelo, got to hang out with him, got to have lunch with him, and a couple of other interesting things that we'll go into either later in this podcast or perhaps our second episode. I'm not sure how this is all going to time out just yet. But we talked to Bill about his new book that he just finished writing and got released. And I'll be bringing that to you here shortly. Right here at the top, I wanted to very quickly, I know I said I wasn't going to talk about a lot of WWE, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I do feel that it is relevant to indie wrestling that Bryan Danielson won the World Heavyweight title last night on WWE's TLC pay-per-view, or Daniel Bryan, if you refer. To me, he'll always be Bryan Danielson. But he did come out and cash in his Money in the Bank case against the Big Show, and now Bryan Danielson is the World Heavyweight Champion. I really do hope that they give him a chance to prove, you know, I mean, Bryan Danielson at one point was the poster child for independent wrestling. I mean, the man has been all over the place. He's wrestled all over the world and has proven time and time again that he is pound for pound one of the best wrestlers in the world. Now, you know, to see him on top in the sports entertainment genre is surprising, to say the least, because, you know, it's never been a question of his talent and definitely not a question of his wrestling skills. But he's usually not the kind of guy that they push hard on WWE. And to right now, to take a look at WWE and see that Daniel Bryan is the holder of the World Heavyweight title and CM Punk is the holder of the WWE title is sort of surreal considering their history and Ring of Honor and just the independents in general. So I think maybe hopefully this is maybe showing kind of a shift in things, and that maybe the indie guys are going to start getting more of a chance in the WWE and not just written off as quote-unquote indie guys when they do get there. So, like I say, this may be the beginning of a new era of sports entertainment, or it may just be a bump in the road where they, you know, try something and then quickly write it off as not working. But I hope that's not the case, because if anybody deserves a chance, it's Brian Danielson, whichever you prefer. And I would really like to see him and get a serious run and a chance to take the ball and show him what he can do with it. Another big win last night at TLC that a lot of people are talking about was Zack Ryder winning the U.S. title from Dolph Ziggler. And I know there's a lot of people celebrating that. I'm sure there's probably more people excited about the Zack Ryder U.S. title win than even the Daniel Bryan world title win. And it is a very, very significant win. Not so much just because it's the U.S. title, but Zack Ryder, I'm going to be the first to admit, I'm not a fan of Zack Ryder's gimmick. I don't find the woo-woo-woo entertaining. I don't care for the, you know, spike your hair and all that crap. But I have nothing but the utmost respect for Zack Ryder, because I believe this guy has started what will become a turning point in the professional wrestling business, at least as far as WWE and sports entertainment is concerned. But I think it goes, I think it really across the board is something that people are going to have to look at and realize that in this day and age, Zack Ryder is kind of a throwback to old school professional wrestling. Now, I know right now you're saying, you know, okay, this Gene Jackson officially doesn't know what the hell he's talking about if he thinks Zack Ryder's old school. Let me explain what I mean by that. In the old days, and a guy like Bill Dundee that I talked to Saturday will tell you this, talk to any wrestler, professional wrestler from the old school, and they will tell you that, you know, before, all you got was an opportunity. And sometimes you didn't even get that, but, you know, you had to come up with your own, you know, your own gimmick, your own promos, your own persona, and kind of make your own way in this business. You had to you know, kind of make your own breaks. And what you did mattered. And that's how you moved up the ladder. And in recent years, everything's become just like a TV show, to where, you know, you just cross, the guys just cross their fingers and hope and pray they're given a big part, or they're handed a character or handed a promo that breaks them through and makes them a star. And you take Zack Ryder, who, you know, he was one of the edge heads. You know, he come up through the developmental system. He got his first chance as far as being on TV, being one of the edge heads with Curt Hawkins. And then when that run its course, they were kind of cast off just into obscurity. And Zack developed this new persona. He kept adding on his new little catchphrases, his woo-woos and all this different stuff, and the new hairdo and, you know, different outfits. And then he got a YouTube show, and then he got on Twitter and Facebook, and he started this, you know, grassroots campaign to get himself over. And I know a lot of people wrote him off. I was like, it's never going to work, because if they don't want you to be a star, if they don't want you to succeed, or they didn't create the persona and the angle, they're not going to ever get behind it. But this guy has somehow managed to become so popular via his YouTube show and just his internet presence, encouraging people to make signs and take them to be in the crowd at the house shows and at the pay-per-views and at the Monday Night Raws. And I guess after so many months of seeing Zack Ryder shoved down their throat by the fans, you know, showing up with posters and writing, you know, WWE.com, and just demanding that Zack Ryder get a chance, they finally caved, and they started getting him a little more, schedules him more regular on the house shows. They start putting him on TV more. They start giving him a little bigger part. They give him a little more opportunity to start trying to get his, you know, his catchphrases and things on TV. And what you've seen last night, Zack Ryder winning the U.S. title, is a result of a man taking control of his own destiny. And I'm not saying they couldn't just decide to just completely shut it down tomorrow, but the fact is, had Zack Ryder just accepted, you know, what they gave him and just waited for them to make, you know, to give him an opportunity, Zack Ryder would be wrestling at an Armory this weekend. Zack Ryder would have been, you know, got the old Future Endeavor Creative has nothing for you, and he would be wooing his way to the ring at a local indie show. And he didn't accept that, and he went and he found a way to get himself over. And I have nothing but respect for Zack Ryder for that very thing. And I think a lot of people are going to look at this and see what he's done and hopefully take it upon themselves to try to do something like that for themselves. And I mean, I'm not saying everybody can do that. Not everybody's going to be able to get a YouTube show or a podcast and turn themselves into a star, but just that proactiveness of getting out there and trying, you know, trying to come up with something, trying to strike a chord with the fans, and trying to make a little bit of your own PR rather than waiting for somebody to do it for you. And that works on every level. You ain't got to, I tell you, another guy that did that on independent levels, Dustin Starr. People around the Mid-South area that know who Dustin Starr is. Dustin Starr did something very similar. You know, getting on, he got on, you know, excuse me, got on the internet. Let me take a drink. He got on the internet. He got him a blog. He got him a Twitter. And while a lot of people were saying, you know, that Dustin was obnoxious, he's killing his, you know, he's killing himself with everybody, nobody's going to want to book him, he's too controversial, eventually Dustin Starr got a developmental contract. Now, you know, he got there and had to be a referee and ran into a lot of roadblocks along the way. But nonetheless, Dustin Starr's name was in people's mouths because he put it there. And he was out front and center because he put himself there. So, the lesson is, make your own way. Make your own breaks. If you're not getting the attention you feel you deserve, make them give you the attention you deserve. I think everybody could learn from that and benefit from that way of thinking. So, kudos to Zack Ryder, and congratulations to both him and Bryan Danielson. And I really do hope that maybe we're seeing the dawn of a new era in WWE where they kind of take things in a new direction, because Lord knows the previous direction certainly hasn't got them in a good place. So moving on from there, I want to talk about this past Friday night. Friday night, NWA Pro South Wrestling in Piedmont, Alabama, at the Pro South Arena, a show that they have hyped for quite some time, probably about at least 2 months now. You've been hearing about the NWA World Heavyweight Champion Scrap Iron Adam Pearce was coming to town to defend the World Heavyweight title right there in Piedmont. Surprisingly, it would be the second time this year that the NWA World title would be defended in Piedmont, Alabama. And they hyped the show, and a little bit of what we were just talking about there. This was an instance where all the guys really got excited. You've seen all the Pro South wrestlers blowing up Facebook every day, giving posts and inviting people, doing internet radio interview shows, doubled up. I think, you know, they hung a lot more posters on what they've been doing, and really, really, really trying to get the word out for this show. And they ended up with 140 people, and in that building, 140 looks like a lot, and that's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, there's a lot of shows out there that would die for 140 people. I think Wicked Nemesis wrote it in his report. I think it's sad that it only drew that much, simply because I don't think people in the area, wrestling fans in the area, really appreciate what they miss not going to that show. Adam Pearce, while maybe not being well known in this part of the country, is a veteran who he's been in the business many years. He's worked a lot of people, a really talented guy, but he's still young. He's still, you know, I'm like saying he's not an old washed-up champion, but he's also, you know, a lot more experienced than a lot of the guys that they get the opportunity to see. And I don't know that, I mean, the NWA World title, granted, yeah, it's not what it once was, but it's still a respected title. At the end of the day, that belt that Adam Pearce wears out to that ring, is the belt that was worn by Harley Race, the Funks, Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, you know, the Briscoes, all these different guys. And it has a rich history, and it should be respected. And in my opinion, Adam Pearce does bring a lot of prestige to that title. I think he's a worthy champion. I think he represents the NWA well when he goes to these towns and he defends the title. Now, the big story, and like I said, this show is not going to be kayfabe. It's not here for me to sit here and try to get over. I'll talk to you about these guys, and I'll tell you what I think of them, and hopefully it'll get them over with some of you in that aspect. But I'm not going to sit here and try to sell the angles in a kayfabe sort of way. So to get to the heart of the matter about the show at Piedmont, the big controversy, and it was covered in an interview with PW 24/7, namely one of their hosts, the Wicked Nemesis. Wicked Nemesis is a manager. He's a guy who's been in the business for a while in these parts. He's pretty well known, but he's a very noted critic of not only Pro South Wrestling, but especially Ace Haven in particular. Nemesis has been very critical of Ace, and I'm not saying that unrightfully so, but he is one of the guys that's known to call him out and pretty much, you know, give his opinion openly. And Nemesis was at the show, and I was looking forward to reading what he was going to say about it, because, like I say, he did the interview with Ace, and it was deemed to be a hugely controversial interview and everything. And honestly, the interview really wasn't that controversial. It wasn't as hard-hitting and as harsh as it could have been, I didn't think. I thought it was very professional. To his credit, I thought it was very professional. He did ask a couple of hard questions and put him on the spot, but he wasn't mean about it or anything of that nature. But the big thing everybody's issue is for those that don't know, who may not be familiar with Pro South Wrestling, Ace Haven is the son of the promoter, Terry Beatty. Ace Haven is the booker for Pro South Wrestling. And so, obviously, when he ends up with the world title match, regardless of the kayfabe, you know, explanation for him getting the title shot, he won a tournament and all that sort of thing. Clearly, there was a lot of heat and a lot of flack given when people heard that Ace Haven would be wrestling Adam Pearce for the world title for various reasons, but most notably because he's the promoter's son and he's the booker. Now, let me give you my honest opinion on this. And now, some might say, well, okay, Gene Jackson doesn't have and is not going to give his true opinion because he works there. Well, that's not true, because anybody that knows me, I speak my mind. I don't care if I work there or not. I have the whole reason I work for Pro South right now is because I did a review of their show and was critical of it, which got me and Ace Haven to talking, and eventually came to be friends and everything, and it ended up leading to me eventually working there. But they know, you know, they know my feelings on a lot of things, and they know I'm not going to hold back just to keep, you know, keep my spot or whatever. And I don't think that they're so fickle that if I said something negative on a podcast, they wouldn't want me working there anymore, because it's not anything I wouldn't have said to them in person. But in all honesty, whether I work there or not, if people are honest with themselves, the fact of the matter is, whether Ace Haven is the booker, whether his father owns the company, Ace Haven is over with the Piedmont crowd. If you were there when he defeated Brandon Colum in the Loser Leave Town match, I mean, the place went nuts. If you were there when he beat Brandon Colum again, when he unmasked Brandon and got, you know, and I got fired and that whole angle, the place went nuts. Every week when Ace Haven comes to the ring, the crowd pops. Now, that being said, even though that's the case, even though he is one of the most popular guys on the show, now, granted, now you might say, well, he's the most popular because he books it, because, you know, his dad's a promoter or whatever. Since when has that mattered? Jerry Lawler booked Memphis, but nobody sits around and criticizes him that he was world champion, that he was in the main event every week. Because the crowd bought it. The crowd cheered and the crowd came to see it. So therefore, it didn't matter who booked it. It worked. It got over. So by the same token, why this would be any different, Ace Haven's over. So why not give Ace Haven the world title shot? Now, I know for a fact that this is something that a lot of people thought it was just, oh, Ace just threw himself in there and didn't care what anybody thought. I know for a fact, and I don't know if he wants me talking about all this in here or not, but whatever. I don't think it's anything worse than anything Nemesis has talked about. So, I know for a fact that Ace stressed over for a while whether or not to put himself in the match. And you got to look at the track record. Colt Cabana came to town with the world title. Ace had nothing to do with that match. He didn't put himself in it. The World Tag Team Champions have come there twice. Ace didn't put himself in it. Shawn Tempers has brought the North American title there twice. Ace Haven didn't wrestle him. Didn't have anything to do with his angle. So, you know, I asked him. I said, you know, with the angle we've got going on and everything, you know, why don't you have the match against Adam Pearce? And he flat out told me, no, I can't be in the match with Pearce because it's going to be, you know, there's going to get me too much heat. People are going to squawk. There's going to be too much stuff said. Now, I'm not saying that I really persuaded him or that he would listen to me over anyone else, but I will say right here on this show in front of everybody that I was one of the people who told him he should get the match with Adam Pearce. And if people don't like it, oh well. Because by his own admission and by everyone's own admission, people are already talking crap anyway, so who cares? They're going to talk about you regardless. So why not have the match? I mean, he's one of the most popular guys there. The crowd would buy into it. The crowd would want to see him win the title and hopefully bring people there to see it. The point of the show is to draw a crowd and to entertain a crowd. And if you have those two elements there, what is the problem? To me, taking yourself out of the match to please other people who don't buy tickets is a bigger travesty than to do what you feel is best for the show and best for the crowd that's coming to see it and the hell with everybody else. So that was my take on it, and that's what I told him. And again, I'm not saying that was a deciding factor, but he ended up going ahead and doing it. Now, I was really anxious to see what Wicked Nemesis would put in his report because, like I said, if anybody was going to call him out, if anybody was going to nitpick for any little thing, he would be the one to do it. And I'm not knocking him for that. He has every right and he has no reason not to. So I was really anxious to see that report that come out this morning. And Nemesis, in his own words, said this was the most solid show, the solid Pro South show he's been to, their best show of the year. I would agree with that. And that's not saying he didn't have some criticisms throughout the show, little things here and there, but I mean, as with every show. But in the big scheme of things, he really didn't, I mean, he didn't knock any of the matches. He didn't knock the show. He got a 4 out of 5 Mohawks, which is his scale, which would be the equivalent to Meltzer stars. He picked apart a couple of the things on each match, and in the world title match, a couple of things he didn't feel made sense. And by my account, there were some things in the world title match and all the matches here and there that didn't make sense. But that's to be expected. I thought overall, though, I agree with him. The tag team title match was really good. The guys worked really hard. The crowd was into it. The crowd popped when they were supposed to and got mad when they were supposed to. And that match, of course, was Sean Siegel and Caden Knight dropping the tag belts to Big Toom and Daniel Alexander of the Epic Alliance, with Epic Grant Mitchell hitting the ring for the finish for the Heat. You had the All Out title, Mike Posey defending against Frankie Valentine. Two guys who are really professional. Frankie is really over with the crowd. Piedmont fans really love Frankie Valentine. Mike Posey is if you don't know Mike Posey was a referee in TNA, and he's back wrestling again. He was a wrestler before, and he's back in the ring now. Mike Posey is a tremendous athlete. Mike Posey is a great wrestler. He's in great shape. He takes it very seriously. He's on a yoga mat from the time he gets there till he hits the ring, you know, stretching, doing the different yoga exercises. Really dedicated, and a guy that I see succeeding because he wants it, and he's going to make it happen. And that's a guy I plan to talk to really soon. One of these next few episodes should have an interview with Mike Posey, because I'd really like for people to get to know him and know more about him. And that'll be happening soon. But back to the point, the other match was a three-way dance for the Pro South Heavyweight title, the Instant Classic, or I'm sorry, the Future Classic. Tyler Gage defending his title against Brian Alexander and Epic Grant Mitchell. Again, I thought this match told a really good story. The guys executed it very well. You got Epic and Brian, who are both part of the Epic Alliance, two heels, both trying to win the title. I thought that aspect of the match was very well done. You know, the power struggle between the two heels, both wanting to get the title away from Tyler Gage. They really highlighted a new mean streak in Epic that hasn't been shown before. I thought the guys did a great job with that. And while I'm on the topic, I think Brian is probably the most experienced guy in the locker room. He's got years and years on all those guys. And he does a very good job mentoring all the guys in the dressing room, trying to teach them things. One of the great things about Pro South, in my opinion, Pro South Arena, as I've said many times before, is one of the best setups for a wrestling show I've seen in the area. And when guys like Adam Pearce and you know, Tempers and different people come, they all agree. They have cameras, about six or eight cameras, which are old surveillance cameras, hanging up in that building, attached to monitors in the dressing room. So the guys in the dressing room can watch the show, and they can see the ring and the matches that are going on from about eight different views. And the benefit of that is everybody's able to sit back there and watch everyone else's match. Now, the benefits of that are multiple. One, if everybody's watching each other's match, you don't see the same thing going on throughout the night. If one match, they're working the leg, you don't turn around and see it again in the next match or the next match. If, you know, another match did the cutoff spot a certain way, you don't see it in the next. Where a lot of indie shows, you will see the same thing done two or three matches in a row because nobody's watching each other's matches and nobody's conferring on what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. So you see a lot of the same stuff being done over and over. Not at Pro South. Another benefit of that is guys can watch, they, you know, sit around and watch the matches together and see what works, see what doesn't work, see what people do wrong, and see what people do right. Not for the purpose of sitting around and ripping on people and, oh, look, they screwed that spot up, or giving them crap when they come back to the dressing room. But, I mean, literally for learning purposes. And then guys like Brian will watch the match, and then when the guy comes in, hey, when you did this, you know, if you would have did this instead, or if you did it this way, or if you, you know, whatever the case may be, the guys are able to learn, you know, where, and Brian ain't got to sit out there in front of the crowd and watch their match, but he's able to see it. And I try to do a lot of that. I'm not saying I'm the most experienced actual in-the-ring wrestler, but, I mean, I've been in the business a long time, and I've watched and studied and know enough about the business that, you know, I try to interject some ideas here and there for finishes, for, you know, this, you know, here's how you could do this a little different, a little better. And that's not to say that I could physically do it better, but I do know how it is to be done. And the great thing about those guys, they're all young. They're all kind of the same amount of experience, but they're all really willing to learn. They all have a good attitude about the business. They want to make themselves a better wrestler, and more importantly, they want to make Pro South the best show it can be. And when you've got that going on, I mean, it really helps. And so back to the Pearce and Ace Haven match. Was the match flawless? No, not at all. I mean, there were some issues, but it wasn't obvious to the fans, and apparently it wasn't obvious to the workers because, you know, Nemesis really didn't point out any glaring mistakes in his report, and I'm sure he would have. And that was the great thing about it. I mean, me having sat there with them as they went over the match knew when a couple things didn't go the way they had been planned, but since the fans weren't back there when it was planned, they don't know the difference. So they were covered up really well. And the big thing people were talking about before the match, besides just, oh, Ace put himself in the match, was, well, Ace is so small, he's not going to, you know, look like he could wrestle Adam Pearce. Anything he does is not, it's going to look phony or whatever. Well, Adam Pearce is experienced enough that, okay, a guy smaller than him, well, he's a big dude. He's going to run into a guy that are smaller than him. A lot of the guys he wrestles going to be smaller than him. A lot of the guys I wrestle are smaller than me. There's ways to work that. And he knows how to do it, and that's what they did. And in the context of that match, and it's a credit to not only Pearce, but also a credit to Ace Haven. When you were watching that match, at no point did it feel like Ace Haven didn't have any business being in there. The spots they did all made sense. And, I mean, he showed fire, you know, going after him and trying to get the title. And the crowd bought it. The crowd was into it. And that's the key thing. If the crowd's buying it, then what's the problem? You know, who cares who the booker is? Who cares who his father is? The crowd bought it. They enjoyed the match. They got behind him. They wanted to see him win. Now, were there little things here and there that could have been done different? Like Nemesis pointed out that, you know, Pearce did a, you know, the old stalling tactic at the beginning where he walks out of the ring and then the ring announcer announces, you know, if they don't stop chanting, let's go Ace, he's going to leave. And Nemesis felt like Ace should go after him. And I see his point on that. And yes, that probably would have been wise. And to me, that's where you start running into, you know, problems, and that's where the guys all have a lot to learn. Well, it's a pretty simple answer why Ace didn't go after Adam. That wasn't the plan. You know, it wasn't laid out that way. And so guys don't really feel, especially a guy as experienced as Adam Pearce, a guy who's the champion, you know, they're already nervous. You're not going to rock the boat and go, you know, jump out there and do something that wasn't part of the plan. And that all comes with experience. But I do think that's the biggest thing. If anybody asks me in the dressing room, you know, what do we need to work on? What do we need to learn? Everybody, and now I'm not picking on Pro Style. This is all the locker rooms I'm in. This is all the shows you go to these days. The biggest thing everybody needs to learn is how to work, you know, off the cuff and be a little more, I don't know what the word I'm trying to say is, but everything is so planned out. You know, everything is step by step by step by step planned out, and it really doesn't leave a lot of room for ad libs or any kind of you know, improvisation during the match. So then, you know, moments like that, if somebody knows the business, they'll go, well, why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do that? Well, it's a pretty simple answer, because that wasn't what they were planning to do. But that all comes with time, I think. I think eventually they'll learn and they'll be more comfortable. But I don't think anybody there left out of there feeling cheated. I think, that, like I say, it was one of the best shows. It's the best Pro South show I've seen, top to bottom, where every match played its part. Everybody worked hard. Everybody did their best. And I think the crowd saw a good show. And I think they'll see, I think they'll reap the benefits of it. I think they'll see people come back and bring more people with them after seeing that show. And I think Ace Haven, I think maybe he proved a point that night that he, you know, he deserved to be in there. And like I say, the point of bringing guys like Adam Pearce, who's been around the world and done the things he's done and has the experience he's done, it's beneficial to the show from top to bottom, not just because you're advertising you got the world champion and it might bring some more people, or because Ace Haven's getting to wrestle a guy like, you know, like Adam that's, you know, done the things he's done. The guys get a chance to learn, because not only did Ace learn the other night, all the guys did, because everybody sat and watched the match together like they do. I mean, all the guys sit around the monitors, they watched the match. So when Pearce came back to the dressing room and explained to Ace, you know, the things in the match that worked, the things that didn't work, the things he should, you know, do different, and the reasons for those, not only did Ace learn those things, but everybody in the dressing room learned those things. And it wasn't like a dressing down, you know, scolding. He's teaching the guys, and that's how you learn. That, to me, that kind of stuff is invaluable. That is what bringing those guys in is all about, not just the rub of, oh, hey, I worked with so-and-so. But I guarantee you, all of us in that dressing room learned more that night. Excuse me. Learned more that night from him than they would a year's worth of everybody wrestling each other who all had the same experience. It's getting in there with guys who have other experience, has more experience, and can teach you things that you don't already know. That is what the wrestling business is all about, and that's how you get better. And I think everybody on the show, from top to bottom, is a little better having worked that show and having learned some things that night. So I think, all in all, I think it was a very positive experience. I think Pro South's one of the best young shows out there. I'm proud to be a part of it, and I hope that I'm able to help in some small way, coming up with angles and going out there and working and giving people advice. I hope it helps out some way, because I mean, that's what I want to do. I want to have fun and work, but I also want to hopefully give something positive when I'm there too, and I'm not just there taking up space. So if you want to check out Pro South, like I say, every Friday night at the Pro South Arena in Piedmont, Alabama. And also, you can go to facebook.com/ProSouthWrestling. Learn more about them there. Check out the show. Check out the wrestlers. If there's any promoters out there that's looking for some, good young talent, guys that, want to work hard, that want to learn, but they do have, they got good gimmicks, they got a look, book them for your show. Give them a call, check them out, get some of these guys some extra work, and it'll be mutually beneficial. Not only will it help them out, but it'll help you out, get you some new faces on your show, get some people there, some exciting people that haven't been seen. So it's good for everybody, and I think that's one of the things the business needs right now more than anything, is a lot more networking and working together amongst all the talent, and having everybody kind of move around different places and get experience working in front of different crowds, working with different wrestlers. So, again, facebook.com/ProSouthWrestling. Check them out, and let me know what you think. Now, we're going to move on. I'm not going to be able to cover the whole weekend like I originally planned, because I don't want these podcasts to go on forever, like some podcasts do, like some of my old podcasts have done. I want to talk about real quick. Saturday was the Wrestling News Center Christmas party. My wife Rosie and I loaded up and went to Tupelo, Mississippi to be a part of that. It's the first one. Every year around Christmas, the Wrestling News Center crew, Hollywood Jimmy Blaylock, who owns the site, takes all his writers and columnists out, buys them lunch at Logan's, and everybody hangs out and has a good time, gets to, meet up at least once a year. And this was my first chance getting to go. This is the first year that I've been a part of the Wrestling News Center crew. And we'll go into that a little more on the next podcast. I'll tell you a few funny stories about that whole experience. Before we went to the Christmas party, though, we found out that there was going to be a book signed in Low, Mississippi. But they had a superstar, Bill Dundee, who has written his autobiography. It's called If You Don't Want to Know the Answer, Don't Ask the Question. And anybody that knows Bill Dundee knows that is a very, very proper title for a book written by him, because Bill Dundee will certainly give you his answer, his honest answer, if you ask the question, whether you like it or not. And he was there. The Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson were there. They were signing autographs and selling pictures and DVDs and giving out tickets to the TFW show that night in Tupelo. I was hoping to get a chance to talk to them, but they had another place to be before the signing was over with. But I did get an opportunity to talk with the superstar. And, what a great... I've read some of his books so far. The book is as really interesting as I knew it would be. And it's doing well. I mean, I didn't get a chance to really ask him about the other book signings and the orders so far. But I know in the time that we were there, we probably seen him sell 30 or 40 books. So I think the book's doing real well for him. I think people will be very, very entertained by it. I know to me, it was just good to me to see all the people coming in there. And, Tupelo was always a big wrestling town before, the Memphis show. The Memphis TV was strong there, and they brought live shows to Tupelo every Friday night for years. And the people that come in, and you've seen how happy they were to get to meet Bill and tell them the story, their favorite memories of watching him, back in the day, and to see him tell them stories and how much he enjoyed doing that. Made me feel good, because, wrestling holds a special place in my heart. Whether I had ever set foot in a ring or had anything directly to do with it, just being a fan of it all my life since I was a small child and growing up and getting to go to shows and watching the TV religiously, pretty much just my whole life revolved around it. Knowing how much it meant to me, seeing that other people feel the same way and seeing how happy it made them to walk in there and get their book signed and get to swap a few stories with a guy who's a legend in the business was really cool, and we enjoyed it. And like I say, we ended up, you know, I did an interview with him there, recorded it there at Fun World, and ended up, Bill ended up going along with us to the Christmas party, so, you know, we got to go have lunch with him and hang out and do some other things, which will be part of the stories I tell you in the next podcast on episode 2. But right now, I want to go to that interview recorded live at Fun World this past Saturday there in Tupelo, Mississippi, as I talked to the superstar, Bill Dunn.
All right, we're back here on the Wrestling News Center podcast. This is Gene Jackson, and I'm here with a legend in professional wrestling, superstar Bill Dundee. Bill, how's it going?
Doing real good, Gene. How about you? Getting ready for Christmas?
Ready for Christmas. You ready for the big show tonight in Boonville? But I got one of my Christmas presents today. I came here today, got the new book. When I found out that Randy Hales told me a few months back that superstar Bill Dundee was working his autobiography, I knew that I definitely had to get a copy of it. So I'm sure that had to be a pretty interesting experience. Tell us a little bit about the process it's taken of writing a book of this nature.
Well, it started off a little different how it kind of ended up. Randy Hales, Randy speeded the process up real good, because I never knew Randy could type the way that he can type. He can damn near type as quick as I could talk. Wow. So Randy was a big help in putting this book together in the time that we did it, because I'd either talk to him on the telephone or we would sit at a table and talk, and he'd get the page wrote about as quick as I said it. So then we sent it over to Mark James. He put it all together, put all the pictures, got the cover made, and did all that kind of thing, you know, that part. But Randy was a big influence in getting this book done on time.
Cool. Was there any stories that came up while you guys were coming up, you know, with the stories for the book, and you were going over any stories that came to you that maybe, you know, you hadn't even thought of in years that, you know, you may have never thought of again had it not been the process of writing this book?
Well, there was a lot of them, but you couldn't put it in the book because some of the people were still married to this. No, we're not going there. But no, the funny ones we did, and Randy knew a lot of the story. I've known Randy since he was 14. He's now 50. He turned 50 the other day. So I've known him a long time, too. He used to go over to Jonesboro, and he helped Eddie Martin run Jonesboro way back when he was just a kid. He sold popcorn, did the programs. So he knew a lot of stuff, too. So Randy would say, hey, Bill, you remember this? You remember that? Then it would all come back, just like you said. You forget because you do so much. I have watched YouTube videos and think, I don't remember doing that, because you do so many of them. And you know, guy came in here today and he said, I watched the match with you and Tommy Rich against Don Carson and the Red Shadow. I had forgot all about ever wrestling them, and we did it in Memphis and a little program there. So I had forgot all about Carson and the Shadow ever being here. And the guy said, oh, I really enjoyed it. So things like that, yeah. And Randy would spark a little thing in the book and we'd write it, and there it is.
Absolutely. Well, tell us, for anybody listening right now who can't make it, you are doing some book signings. You did the one here today in Tupelo. One tonight in Boonville, and I'm sure they can follow along on Wrestling News Center and find out about some other book signings. But yep. If someone's not in the area, how would they go about ordering your book?
Amazon.com's got it. But the other one, the best one, I think, is BillDundeeBook.com. That's our website. Mark James and I look after that, Mark James mainly. So the BillDundeeBook.com, that's a good one to get it off of, too.
All right. Well, everybody wants to make sure and check that. We'll ask you a couple more questions here, though. You know, nowadays in wrestling, smaller guys are a lot more prominent, getting a lot more opportunities than they did in the past. And you coming up in the age of you know, monsters and steroided up guys and all that.
Right.
Tell us a little bit how you were able to be such a fixture and such, you know, you were always at the top of the card. You were always a main event guy in a world of guys who were much larger and in a way that people believed it. Nobody ever doubted Bill Dundee, even though he wasn't the biggest guy in the fight.
I wasn't the tallest guy in the fight, but I mean, in my heyday, when Barnes and I came here, I was 228 pounds, so it's not exactly, you know, a skinny little kid. I was 228 pounds, 5'7". So moving me around was a little harder than people thought it was. And I learned to wrestle back in the day, too, so I mean, it was. If it got that way, but nobody ever, you hear of all them things, but nobody ever wants to do that in the ring. They don't even want to do it in the dressing room. So I had never had no problems. And when the promoter realizes you can sell tickets, that's all that matters. They don't care if you're little, big, tall, skinny, whatever, women, whatever. We're on a roll here. That's a guy from Memphis. But anyway, he's big, Ron. But anyway, I had no problem that way. And nobody, Joe LeDuc, Jean-Louis, they would come in here and, you know, I'm 5'7", like I said, 225 pounds then. They never had no problem. Hogan, sometimes he would, you know, he wanted to beat monsters. Bill Watts was another one. They were 6'6" and 300 pounds. They wanted to beat somebody up 7 foot. You know, their ego was a little different. But most guys, Dusty Rhodes had no problems. I mean, Dusty, big old guy, you know how he was. And so I never had a problem. And there wasn't too many little guys doing this when I got here, not working on top, and certainly wasn't the booker. And they never went to Bill Watts to be the booker, and they never went over to Crockett or Ted Turner. So I think me learning from Jerry Jarrett how to put TVs together and do all the things that we did helped, because they said, well, the kid may not be the biggest guy in the world, but he knows a lot about the wrestling business, so, and the angles he knows works.
Do you think you sometimes don't get enough credit that you deserve for your input on the booking of Mid-South and Memphis? You know, people talk about Lawler and Jerry Jarrett, and everybody talks about how Bill Watts was such a great booker, but a lot of people don't realize you had a huge hand in the booking of Mid-South and what people consider the heyday.
When I went to Bill Watts, he was almost out of business. Jerry Jarrett, he came up here, and they went down and looked at some of the talent, and they were going to switch talent, and they didn't see anybody down there the like, so they didn't bring nobody up here. But they went and looked at Watts' territory down there in Louisiana, so they told Bill to talk to me. So I went down there in 83 and 84, and that was the two best years that Watts ever had in his life. Never mind anything else, that was the two best years. And I took Ricky and Robert, the Midnight Express, Terry Taylor, Magnum TA was already there. I took Buddy Landell, I brought in Dutch Mantell, and then in the end, the Fantastics. And it was all people from Tennessee, and they all knew, you know. Here is the thing, if you ever go to a puppet show, and it's a good puppet show, it's not the puppet dancing, it's the puppeteer. And that's what wrestling bookers are, and that's how it is. If you can make the puppet dance the way you want him to dance, it's your brains, it's your idea, it's your thing. And they don't change nothing, everybody gets along good, and they were good at that. The crew I brought down there, they knew me, they trusted me, and did anything I asked them to do. And we all made a lot of money.
Absolutely. Well, now, you mentioned earlier Joe LeDuc and Dusty Rhodes, a couple guys like that. These days, it seems a lot of the young stars, everybody's kind of cookie cutter. I mean, not a lot of people stand out. You don't have the Joe LeDucs. You don't have the Dusty Rhodes, the King Kong Bundys. You think that's something missing with maybe?
No, it's all Vince McMahon. He wants you the way he wants you, and he wants to control you. So he gives you the name. He gives you, you know, there's a few of them like Stone Cold took it. But he actually wants to own the puppet, not just make it dance. So he dresses you, tells you what to do. Even the interviews today, they're plugged up in their ear and they're telling them what to say and what not to do. Me and Lawler just went out there and whatever came to our head, we said it. And it came across that way. And even Lawler says they have him wired too. Sometimes they'll tell him, say this, say that, you know. So somebody's doing the thinking for you. It's, I don't know.
You think that maybe is why wrestling's lost some of its appeal? Yeah. They don't have those characters?
Yeah, they don't have the characters and they don't have the history. There was a lot of history in this territory. I mean, Tupelo was a lot around a long time before I got here. And Memphis was, and Jerry Jarrett was the one that brought it from the little building downtown Memphis to the Coliseum, and then him and Nick Goulas parted ways in 76, and it boomed. And back to the question you said, did I get enough, what would you say, accolades for being the thing? No, Jerry Jarrett owned it, Lawler owned 25% of it, and I was just an employee, so it was a kind of, I mean, they paid me good, but it was, I knew what my job was. Lawler was the king, Jarrett was the promoter, and I was Bill Dundee, superstar, whatever you want to call it. And I never really tried to be anything else. I was happy, because when you're in the office, you're in charge of your own destiny. You can kind of have the say in what you do or you don't do. If you're just working on the card, and the booker says do this, do that, or the promoter, you do it or you're gone. So at least this way you had it, you know, I talked to Jarrett, talked to Lawler, and you have a little control of your own destiny. But I never really wanted to be Lawler, so I was quite happy with the role I had.
I know, me personally, going working shows and everything, I've noticed that nowadays it seems today's wrestlers are more performers, where you and Lawler went out and you worked the crowd, you worked, you know, your gimmicks, it seems everybody lays out their matches. And do you think there's anybody out there now, any guys out there now that could have hung with you?
Oh, yeah, because that's what had been what they were taught to do. That's how they do it now. I mean, Vince, that walk he does when he struts down that damn aisle, he practices that. And if he doesn't like the first one, they'll reshoot it. I mean, we just went out and did it, and what you see is what you got. I mean, it's like the Tupelo fight. The people have tried to emulate that. You can't do that, because that just happened. I mean, Lawler jumped over there and was on. And people have tried to duplicate it, and everybody knowing what they were going to do doesn't come across that way. That came across like, my God, they're fighting in the concession stand. And that's exactly what we was doing. So,
where today's generation, if the booker in the bag hadn't told them, jump into the concession stand, nobody would have jumped in the concession stand because we weren't told to do that. Or even if just right. Lawler had jumped there, nobody would follow suit.
But the heels jumped over, and that was how it was, and nobody, and that's how the fight used to end. So we would fight back to the back, and then we'd go in the dressing room. The dressing room door was to the left, concession stand was to the right. Well, for some reason, Lawler jumped over behind him. That had never been done before. But once you get there, you can't just look at him. You have to do something. So he picked up the pickles and threw it, and they threw one back, and then the fight was on again. But that had never been done before, and they were as much shocked as we are. If you watch the tape on YouTube, you look at the face when we attack him. It's like, what the hell? We're in the concession stand, and Eddie Marlin's going, what the... You know, and everybody's running around crazy, and old Herman Sheffield, the guy that run it, and his wife, they're trying to pick up all the candies and do all, and we're fighting and carrying on. Jerry Jarrett's in there, say, come on, boys, you can't be doing this. And it was just ad-libbed, as they say.
And as you mentioned, for people, younger people who may not have been around back then, YouTube is a great resource for a lot of the things you guys did in Memphis and Mid-South also. I'd recommend anybody just go search Bill Dundee on YouTube it. But moving up to present times, we want to talk a little bit about, speaking of Randy Hales earlier, you and Randy worked together on the book, but you guys also have started up, or restarted, I guess you should say, Power Pro Wrestling up in Ripley, Tennessee. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Well, just Randy used to say, well, we need to get a town, and there was no towns around it. It was close to him and close to me or whatever, so old JC that owns the building... Ripley Prim, I think, was the last guy, Johnny Morton, he wrestled Edge, was the last guy running it, and he just said he was closing it, so he called me, he said, you want to come run this building? I said, I don't know, let me talk to Randy. So I called Randy, I said, hey man, you want to get back in the wrestling business? He said, oh yeah. So he said, well, call it Power Pro. I said, no problem with me, call it anything you want. So we, because he had Power Pro and people know the name.
Right.
So we opened it back up, and 20 people the first time that we went there, and we've got up to about 85 paid people, so we've come up every week. So we must be doing something right, and we're trying to get it back to the good old days, like the stuff you used to watch in Memphis. I mean, no cussing, no drinking, no none of the stupid stuff, no naked women running around, nothing, you know, like binge half, you know, they look more like pole dancers than they do wrestlers. So we're trying to get it back to the good old days, like what Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee did for 30 years, and people seem to like it and buy it, so if we can get a couple of guys over like that, we'll all be happy.
I know you, I mean, you can't mention everybody, and I hate to leave anybody out, but who's some of the young stars you got going there now that you think are kind of the future of wrestling?
You said that because I'm bad on names. We have John Michaels. We have, this is terrible. I feel embarrassed in doing this because Randy does all the booking, most of it, and he does all of it.
But Joe Kevin's Nichols there, and you had a big hand
in Kevin White's
career.
With his career, and his dad, Mr. White's there. And yeah, I kind of got the guy in the wrestling business.
Right.
And you know, and there's, we got the five star back, Dustin Starr's back. He's lost about 10 pounds since I saw him. He looks great now, little waist, big chest, shoulders, good looking kid. So he's like a young Bill Dundee type body. I mean, you know, that's what girls seems to like. They don't, you know, I mean, just, so we'll get him over there if, you know, if he listens to what Randy's saying and everybody's saying. That's the main thing. Don't want to be smarter than the puppeteer.
Right.
Just if somebody says do this, do that, and it's worked before, why wouldn't it work again? Even Elvis Presley Elvis off. They make a living because they sound like him and look like him, and people obviously like what Elvis did. So if you're impersonating him and you do it right, people will buy a ticket to see you. If you're bad at it, they won't. So it's the same with wrestling. If something worked, we can't do the two pole fight again because we've already talked about that. That don't work. But we can do a lot of other angles that we did that people haven't seen in a long time, and think, wow, what's old's new? You know, that's the old saying, and that happens. So if the kids will listen to Randy, because he's the one that kind of gets in the middle of that, wants to do all the booking and stuff, it'll work. It's obviously come up every week. So we'll give him the shot. That's all we can do.
All right, well, that's great to have Power Pro back, and I'm looking forward to getting home and reading this book this weekend. Should be a very interesting read. And I know you got some people that's been in here looking around, so I don't want to keep too much of your time. So we're going to let you go. But just a reminder, everybody that's listening, once again, BillDundee.com, or just go to Amazon, search Bill Dundee.
Or BillDundeeBook.com.
I'm sorry, BillDundeeBook.com. Yeah. That's the one.
Really, of course, get me and nothing will happen.
And, of course, Mark James, who is synonymous now with Memphis Books, all his Memphis history and all of them, does a tremendous job. And I want to thank Bill for talking with us today, and wish him the best of luck.
On that book, I just did the talking, and Mark James and Randy did all the writing and the putting it together. I mean, I just told the stories, and I leave them. Let's put it that way.
All right, well, there you hear it from the superstar, Bill Dundee. This is the podcast went a little longer than I intended. Most weeks, I'm going to try not to talk quite as long as I did today, but I get started on certain subjects, and I get to talking a little longer than I mean to, but I'm going to plug a few quick friends of the show here real quick before we get out of here. Intense Pro Wrestling returns to East Amory Community Center as part of their Pride Month, kicking off January 6th and 7th with their big IPW Heavyweight Championship Tournament. Bell time will be 8 p.m. with tickets $6, children and four get in free. The tournament for the title will feature such stars as DC, Daniel Cross, Curly Moe, The Show, Chris Adams, Bad Attitude, Tony Dabbs, The Stud, Scott Porteau, Kamala Jr., The Natural Josh Matthews, Devin Reigns, as well as returning stars Extreme Bret Michaels, Neil the Real Deal Taylor, and the future Chris Styles. Plus, many more will be in action, so make sure you check that out. They're going to be in Amory every weekend that month, but it all starts off, Pride Month kicks off January 6th and 7th. And for more info on Intense Pro Wrestling, go to facebook.com/IPW Expo, E-X-P-O. Another thing we want to talk about real quick, the hardcore legend himself, Mick Foley. Mick Foley is bringing his Knights in Red Flannel stand-up comedy tour to Birmingham, Alabama at the Stardome Comedy Club on Thursday, January the 12th at 7:30 p.m. Should be a real fun night. I've heard some great things about Mick's stand-up comedy. And for more info, check out stardome.com. You can go there and order tickets. I've also been told there will be a meet and greet with Mick after the show, so come check out the show and then get a chance to meet one of the biggest stars and nicest guys ever in the wrestling business, that of course being the legend Mick Foley. Also remember, every Saturday night EPW Wrestling is in action at the EPW Arena on Highway 45 in Booneville, Mississippi. Bell time is 8 p.m. Always a wild time at EPW. You never know who will show up. Guys like Grandmaster Sexy Brian Christopher, the new Nature Boy Kevin White, Superstar Bill Dundee, Derek King. Guys like that show up all the time unexpectedly. Then you got all the regular stars of EPW. Guys like Hollywood Jimmy Blaylock, The Soul Taker, Bone Crusher, Dangerous David Cox, Casanova Kid, Big Daddy Nino, Buzz Harley, Antoine Smooth, Samoan Raja, many, many more. I got the opportunity to work there this past Saturday night, and I'll be telling you a little bit about it on the next podcast. Had a great time. EPW, definitely check it out. One of the best shows in North Mississippi. But also on Saturday nights, if you're in the Tennessee area, Power Pro Wrestling has returned weekly, as me and Bill just discussed, in Ripley, Tennessee, 207 South Washington Street. The original founder and owner of Power Pro Wrestling, Randy Hales, along with Superstar Bill Dundee, has brought back Power Pro Wrestling to provide a place for some of the best young talent in the area to compete and hone their skills in the ring. See guys like the Power Pro Heavyweight Champion, All That, Alan Steele, Killer Nichols, Austin Lane, Kevin White, Dustin Starr, Eric Wayne, Dan Matthews, Tattoo, and many more, with new stars debuting every single week. So if you're within driving distance of Ripley, Tennessee, make sure you check out the show and check out some of the action via YouTube videos. You can go to facebook.com/powerprowrestling. So that's going to be it for this week. Like I said, on the next episode, I'm going to tell you about the Wrestling News Center Christmas party. I'm going to tell you about my experience at EPW. But that's going to do it for our first episode. I hope everybody enjoyed it. If you did enjoy it, please rate us on iTunes. If you have a comment, suggestion, complaint, a request for a future show, or if you would like Wrestling News Center Podcast to cover your wrestling event and come interview some of your wrestlers, do a report on the show, message me on Facebook or shoot me an email at genejackson95@gmail.com. As always, for more wrestling news, go to WrestlingNewsCenter.com with updates throughout the day, every day. as well as columns from your favorite WNC columnists, including my own Vince Hates Us All column that I write semi-regularly. And most of all, until next time, get out there and support indie wrestling in your area.
So say goodnight to the bad guy.
All right, Dean.